This is The Topic is Trek, episode 39 for Friday, March 1st, 2019. Finding Nero. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already!
Ba-ba-boom.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. Still waiting for my email confirming that I will be one of the people on the Picard series. I'm not going to hold my breath about that. So while I wait, why don't we check who else is with us? Hopefully beaming in to join me, as always, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hey, oh, wait a minute. I got a note from my agent that I got in on the Picard show. Yes.
Oh, well, let's see if I have better luck here. Congratulations, Craig, to Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I have a t-shirt that says the podcast that runs on impulse power. Did you get the title from the show from the t-shirt, or was it the other way around?
Let's see. Which came first, the chicken or the t-shirt? That's an age-old question. I don't have any answers to that.
Chicken wearing the t-shirt.
Yes, exactly. But we weren't chicken to wear our t-shirts on the Trek cruise. Matter of fact, we just saw a video of the latest Trek cruise, and the three of us pop up here and there around the edges of the video. Is very exciting.
Edges?
Yeah.
Craig and I are on the, where they do that pan of the deck with the sea of blue shirts.
Yeah.
Craig and I are on the right hand side, and our wives are on the left hand side. I'm not sure what that means, but
yeah.
Somebody was distancing themselves from us. I don't know.
I think your better halves are the wiser halves,
was fun going through that thing, you know, quite literally frame by frame, going, you see anybody? Nope. Move on. See anybody? And reliving a lot of memories.
Yeah. We saw your wife, Clinton, and she was in the Discovery display.
That's right. The Mirror Universe Museum.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, wearing her hippie outfit because it was the from holodeck to groovy deck night. So it seems like, why is she dressed like that? Because the theme for the, she doesn't always dress like that, although I can't apparently convince Craig of that, you know.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I'm kind of surprised they used the clip of Nana Visitor when she was bombed out of her mind.
Actually, that's what I was just about to say. when we were there and they were cutting that, or recording it, I was thinking, I wonder how they're going to edit that together.
Well, now I thought they were going to dump the whole thing. They did a very good job at editing it.
All right. So we've got a lot to cover. We're going to be going over our Star Trek news. We're going to be discussing the two most recent episodes of Star Trek Discovery. And of course, we'll have our Warp Speed Roundtable. So lots of things here on the show. I'm not sure the Impulse Engines can handle the entire thing, but we're going to get started with our subspace chatter. So let's get our subspace chatter.
Charlie,
yes,
told
Charlie.
You.
I was going to say, let's get our theme going, and all we've got is Charlie. So, you know, he's kind of our theme.
There. Yeah, that's all. I think that was a 336, but I can't be certain.
Ah, don't press all the buttons. It costs money to press the buttons and do that. Oh, we're going to start off with a story that broke the day we're recording this, and I will let the person who let us know about it read it.
When Star Trek news breaks, we'll fix it.
Go ahead, Chuck.
I'm just kidding. No, it's me. So, no surprise, Star Trek Discovery is renewed for season 3.
Yay!
Yeah.
The ongoing mission of Starfleet just got re-upped. That don't sound too good, does it? For another tour of duty on CBS All Access has renewed Star Trek Discovery for season 3. The streaming service has also announced that Michelle Paradise, the originals, X's and O's, will join Alex Kurtzman as co-showrunner for the third season of the sci-fi series and has found its rhythm after its bumpy inaugural season. So Paradise, Michelle Paradise, has joined the Star Trek Discovery team as co-executive producer in season two, which is also the season when Kurtzman took full command of the show after a creative team reshuffling. Kurtzman praised Paradise, who wouldn't? Oh, that Paradise.
Yeah.
As a vital source of quality control and innovation for the Discovery team, her grasp of character and story detail, her drive and her focus have already become an essential in ensuring, have become essential in ensuring the Trek legacy, and her fresh perspective always keeps us looking forward. And in other news, the Picard series has already been renewed for seasons 4, 5, and 6.
And, really? You know, that's because those years want to be on the Picard series so bad that they say, no, you have to renew it so we can be involved in it.
I want in.
Yeah, come on, man.
They're very cool. I'm looking forward to seeing where they take it a little more. Because I think we'll talk about opinions later, I guess, more. But I think they're getting a little more into the traditional Trek that we were expecting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that's good news on that front. And we're going to talk about some more good news when it comes to the service that, at least in the United States, is used to distribute Star Trek Discovery.
Yes, from Engadget.com. With cord cutting on the rise, it seems there's enough room on the table for more internet-only services.
What?
CBS is now reporting that its streaming platforms, CBS All Access and Showtime, reached 8 million subscribers, up 60% from the 5 million reported last year. The number is split evenly between the two, marking the fourfold increase from July 2016. Like its counterpart, CBS is spending big on originals, including high-profile genre and cult fare like CBS All Access exclusive Star Trek Discovery and The Twilight Zone and Showtime's Twin Peaks. And its strategy is paying off, with the company boasting hit streaming targets 2 years ahead of schedule. Wow, that's pretty dang impressive. Mm-hmm. CBS is now upgrading its forecast to target 25 million domestic streaming subscribers by 2022. Comparably, Netflix hit 60.55 million domestic subscribers in its fourth quarter last year. Though it's been around much longer, has a larger library and the biggest streaming content budget. But CBS shouldn't have any issues stockpiling more content. Looking ahead, the broadcaster says its online and cable TV service will complement each other. The example, CBS boss Joe Iannelio, I'm going to go with something like that.
Sure.
used on its Q4 earnings call was taking Season 1 of The Good Fight, a CBS All Access exclusive, and possibly putting it on CBS Broadcast Network. Quote, "They are not leaving the ecosystem. They just want more," Iannelio said, streaming viewers reports Deadline. So let's give it to them.
All right, which, I don't know, that sounded kind of violent at the same time. I'm not sure how to take that. But that does lead into the next story, so... Hey, I'm going to go right to that. Yes.
Hey, I was just going to throw in there that you mentioned the Twilight Zone, and side note, the trailer, the little teaser for that series, yes, looks very interesting to me.
Absolutely. Very atmospheric. And that, yes, premieres on April 1st. So
no, second. No joke.
Hey, I want to tell you. All right. Star Trek Discovery coming to cable in the U.S. ? This story comes to us from Red Shirts Always Die. During a recent earnings call, CBS president and CEO, now I get a chance to say the name, Joe Iannelio, dropped some insight into the possible plan to move shows like Star Trek Discovery to their flagship cable broadcast. Some may remember that, and this is the author, some may remember that I've been tilting at this particular windmill since shortly after I joined Red Shirts Always Die, with my first article cutting through the paywall, and followed up with the suggestion that changes in an advertising model could send Star Trek back to cable. We finally got our first hint that it was happening when news came out that the third announced animated Star Trek series is looking to land on Nickelodeon. But now we have new information that the flagship series of CBS All Access, Star Trek Discovery, along with other exclusive All Access content, could be added to the cable network. And then we have an insert from MediaPost. CBS CEO, let's just call him Joe at this point, asked analysts Thursday evening, what if we took season one of The Good Fight and put it on CBS Broadcast Network to drive subscribers back to CBS All Access? So we're really thinking about that going forward, and obviously that has an effect of reducing costs because it would reduce development costs across the company, he added. So those two stories combined indicate a possible future for how things may work with CBS All Access. You have a show that premieres on All Access and could eventually migrate either a new season or, more likely, previous seasons, make it over to another medium, which then drives people to get CBS All Access for the new season of the thing. So that's there's no timeline. They didn't mention Star Trek Discovery specifically for this, but since that is really their flagship show on the service, you would think they would view that as a big draw to pull more people into CBS All Access. I don't know what the timeline is for anything like this, but I thought it was fascinating to find out that that is something that's possibly in the works.
Well, they're going to have I know we just mentioned the Twilight Zone. They're not showing that on. Nope. That's also
All Access.
All Access, yep. Exclusive. So.
But you also want to build up your content on All Access. I mean, that the article that Chuck was reading talked about the much bigger library that Netflix has.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now you want to build up your catalog as well. So if you have series that only are on CBS All Access, that gives it value. And the more of that you have, the more value you have. Yeah. So if we have we're talking about Star Trek, we're talking about, I did not know. I guess I missed the thing about now is CBS All Access rerunning Twin Peaks, or are they doing a new series? I may have heard about that and just,
well, there was a new series on Showtime. That's what I think he said.
Oh, so that's all right. So that's not on CBS All Access.
Yeah.
All right. I knew about the one that they had done. All right. Got it. All right. I have one more story that I'm going to read before we move on to, I think it's Craig has the story after that.
Mm-hmm.
But this story comes to us from Fanthatrax, which is a Star Wars site.
Wait. You sure you got the right show on this one?
I'm positive. And I'll tell you what this methods to my madness.
I've got a bad feeling about this.
Star Wars TV production begins in the UK. Production on a third as yet unannounced TV series set in the Star Wars galaxy has begun in the UK, according to publicly available company records. We expect this new third series will air on Disney Plus following on from the release of The Mandalorian and the Cassian Andor TV series. Now, why do I bring that up? Because we're talking now about three Star Wars series as well as the continuing Star Wars movies. So keep that in mind when Craig talks about the next thing he's going to talk about.
Oh,
the Mandalorian candidate.
That's right. Yeah. So, Star Trek, as we've been talking about here on the show, because the topic is Trek.
Trek, yes.
Nickelodeon is near a deal for the kids animated series from Alex Kurtzman and Hagman Brothers and CBS TV Studios. Alex Kurtzman and CBS Studios. Boy, we're saying Alex's name.
Yeah, so at least better than Joe. You need the CEO over at Paramount because we can't do.
Welcome to the topic is Alex Kurtzman. So Alex Kurtzman and CBS TV Studios have set the latest extension for the Star Trek TV franchise. Nickelodeon is in negotiations for a Star Trek animated series from Emmy Award winning writers Kevin and Dan Hagman. They did Troll Hunters and Ninjago.
Although I like Ninjago. That's a dance club,
but nobody makes any noise.
That's right. CBS TV Studios and Kurtzman Studio based Secret Hideout banner. So penned by Hagman Brothers, the animated series is targeted at a younger audience. Because of that, it would be the first new Star Trek project outside of All Access CBS. Finally, we got something outside of the fence, and which has an adult focus. Wait, what? It's going to Nickelodeon. It's going to have an adult focus.
No. The ones on All Access have the adult.
Me. I got you. I didn't flip. So there you go.
All right. So you can see now I mentioned the Star Wars thing first because Star Trek is really not the only franchise that's doing this. Now, we've talked before about burnout, but it almost seems like with Disney setting the bar on multiple iterations of things, we've got the same thing going on with them with Marvel between TV and the movies, that really, if you want your franchise to be in the game now, you can't just say, we're only going to have Discovery, and then when that's over, then we'll do a Picard series, and then when that's... It seems like one show just... That's like, oh, isn't that cute? You have a little show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think that we will see this become more of the norm across new franchises. I don't know. I don't know if they'd have Harry Potter type thing, but that idea of you have to have multiple shows. Now, is Star Trek going overboard? I don't know yet. We haven't seen what their game plan is about when this stuff is going to be distributed.
Right.
So it could just be a constant stream of things. And that might be the same thing that Star Wars is doing. I'm not sure if each of those TV series will finish and the next one begins and the next one. And that would then indicate that might be the same strategy that Kurtzman will be taking with the Star Trek franchises.
Yeah, well,
that's very similar to the strategy we've got with this podcast, right? We've started with the podcast, then we're going to have the movie, then we're going to have the animated series. I think we're following. They're following us.
I'm drawing it one frame at a time right now. So just
yeah. All right, so let's move on from there.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to say I feel like I really hope it's not going to be Star Trek overload because I get that feeling it might. But if they have something new and they space it out, like we're kind of space it out.
I see what you did there.
We've had multiple Star Trek series running at the same time.
We had. Now I know that. Next Generation and Deep Space Nine overlapped, mm-hmm. and Deep Space Nine and Voyager overlapped. Mm-hmm. Voyager did not overlap with Enterprise.
I don't believe so.
No, I don't think
so. I think it had finished its run when Enterprise started in 2001.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say there was 2 or 3 years, I think. I can't remember. But so, anyway, I don't want it to, language, but there's plenty of room. I think in Star Wars, there's still plenty of room to put out a bunch of stories, not focused on the Skywalker era. You know, I've seen Knights of the Old Republic and stuff like that. There's a lot of room, a lot of places you can go with that too. So two big universes. I think there's a lot of room to make new stories. I just hope that it's not too much.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and they're also talking about different takes. You know, the animated series that will be on CBS All Access has nothing to do with the Enterprise, has nothing to do with any offers at all. It's all about workers on the lower decks, and it's a comedy. So talk about going outside the normal, iterations of Trek. I think that goes pretty far in that direction. So mixing it up, things like the Short Treks, that's just a new format of something to do. I think, if they were all hour-long dramas, I think that might be a problem, but it seems like they're trying to avoid at least that aspect of burnout by doing different things.
I would love to see a Star Trek in the vein of the original animated series, but with the Kelvin timeline characters.
Oh, interesting.
That'd be cool.
All right. Well, we're going to move off of these stories to something that's a bit more personal, I guess, but it does involve Discovery.
Personal?
Well, I mean, we're down to an individual level here.
Oh, I see where you're going with that. Yes, from cbc.ca, the Canada website. I didn't mean that to sound derogatory or anything.
Sure.
You've upset all Canadian listeners.
It's the Canada website. I mean, the Canada website. It's all in how you say it, I guess.
Right.
In a long history of Star Trek franchise, no Latino man has sat in the captain's chair. Until now. Javier Sotelo is taking on the role of Captain Diego Vela. I'll go with that. In season 2 of CBS Star Trek Discovery, the Ottawa actor joined Terry Loretto on CBC Radio In Town and Out Saturday to talk about. Never heard of that show, so it's hard to figure out where the show ends and the story picks up again. CBS Radio's In Town and Out Saturday to talk about his upcoming work as well as what it's like to break that barrier. And there is an audio file that you can play, 10-minute audio file, if you follow the show notes through our site at The Topic is Trek. You want to click on the episode 39 show notes, and it's got a full transcript there, too. So I encourage you to go over and read that. So I'm all for diversity, man. This is great.
Yeah, I'm wondering now, we've already seen the episode that this is in. This is when Pike is talking to this captain who works at Starbase 9 or 5, I forget, or 925. No, I think it's 5, where Spock had committed himself. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if it's a one-shot deal or not, because maybe we end up going to that Starbase at some point.
It would stand to reason if you're looking for Spock. You know, you can't. I'm not taking any of this stuff at face value when they say, "Oh, he killed 3 men." It's like, yeah, well, so you say.
Yeah. If you are really a captain, no, I'm sure he's a captain, but there's more here than meets the eye, I think.
That's kind of what the message we're getting out of the whole season so far.
Pretty much. Hmm. Pretty much. All right, we're going to move on to another actor you may have heard of associated with Star Trek. And let's see if I can pronounce his name correctly. William Shatner. Yeah, that's close enough.
Will I Am.
Will I Am Shatner says he won't return for a Star Trek TV series. And this comes to us via WeGotThisCovered.com. And apparently they do have this covered. Patrick Stewart's about to return to the world of Star Trek for a brand new TV series in which he'll reprise his fan favorite role as Jean-Luc Picard. As Professor Xavier.
I think it's Javier.
Given that, is there any chance that the franchise's other iconic Enterprise captain would return for his own vehicle? Well, we've previously heard that William Shatner is willing to turn up for a cameo if there's a good enough reason, but would he reprise his role of James Tiberius Kirk as the star of the show? The actor spoke with comicbook.com recently and explained that for this to happen, not only would the character of Kirk need to be
Viridian 3. Yeah,
resurrected after his death in 1994's Star Trek Generations.
That's child's play. That's child's play, by the way.
But he'd also have to be rejuvenated himself, as the 87-year-old doesn't think he could deal with the tall task of leading a TV show nowadays. That word, resurrection, that's a key word. And this is quoting Shatner, and I'm not going to do the voice. Resurrection. You'd have to resurrect me, Shatner, in order to do the daily. I don't. What Patrick is doing, doing a series is debilitating for a young guy, for a 25-year-old, which is what I was doing when I was 25 years old. It's a physical wrecker. It's a mental wrecker. It's a home wrecker because you're working 14, 18 hours a day. And in the last series I did, Boston Legal, I had in rush hour a two-hour commute. So add that. Pretty much a no to doing that.
But they haven't put the money on the table yet.
Yeah.
I was gonna say I got a corresponding story at isthereenoughmoney.com.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we've got the paycheckcovered.com. I also think that it doesn't necessarily indicate, you know, what he's saying obviously is that he doesn't want to do series again, but a mini series is not like a TV series. So if someone could convince him, well, we just want you back for
3 episodes or something.
Yeah. Something
we'll
like that.
We'll do a short trek for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, that would be cool.
Yeah. So he didn't say, oh, absolutely not. This is impossible. Couldn't possibly do it. And I think Shatner long ago realized never say never because you just don't know what's going to,
I'm not doing another movie again. Oh, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Hold my sorry and brandy and watch this. Exactly.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. We're going to move on from there to news of a different sort, the print kind or digital kind these days, I guess.
Yeah. I actually read a lot of comics on digital, but we got a first look at IDW Star Trek comics coming in May. And two of them are Star Trek and one of them is not. So the first one in May of 2019, we got Star Trek Year 5. And as the year of the original missions begin, the crew of the USS Enterprise will have to use all of their skills, every one of them, that they've acquired along the way as they prepare to face the biggest challenge of their lives, a dark threat that doesn't just threaten their existence, but the existence of the entire Federation as well.
Dun, like, dun, dun.
I wonder if they're seeing the Red Angel. Kind of looks like it behind it.
That's the
Tholian. I think that's supposed to be a Tholian.
Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding. These are the jokes, guys.
I get it. I get it. No, I don't get it.
Yeah. So here's one of everybody's favorite characters, Star Trek, the Q conflict. The contest for the ages continues as the captains race to capture the one exotic creature that Trelane is missing from his intergalactic menagerie, a Borg queen. But the godlike beings revere in the games, the crew are hatching a plan of their own. Don't miss the penultimate issue of the biggest Star Trek crossover of all time. The Q-Conflict. And here's the one that, not necessarily Star Trek, but is George Takei related. And yeah, everybody knows George Takei was in a tournament camp. Is that what it was?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When he was younger. Anyway, so this is what this is about. So George Takei has captured hearts and minds around worldwide with his captivating stage presence and outspoken commitment to equal rights. But long before he braved the new frontiers in Star Trek, he woke up as a 4-year-old boy to find his own birth country at war with his father's, and the entire family forced from their home into an uncertain future. In a stunning graphic memoir, Takei revisits his haunting childhood in an American concentration camp as one of over 100,000 Japanese Americans imprisoned by the U.S. government during World War II. Experience the forces that shaped an American icon and America itself in the scripting tale of courage, country, loyalty, and love.
The title of that one is They Called Us Enemy. That's pretty
profound. Oh, did I not say that? I'm sorry. I thought I said it. Yeah.
That's okay. It's kind of like Allegiance, the comic book, I suppose, in a way. Although Allegiance, which is the musical based on George's memories of the internment camps, really is more generational, and I think this one just deals with the actual life in the internment camp, and therefore probably expands a bit more on that than the musical can, because the musical obviously has to keep moving along, and we have flash forwards, flashbacks.
Have you seen that?
I didn't see it on Broadway. Didn't get down there for that, but I did see when they did one of the presentations in a movie theater of showing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw it there.
Was it good? Did you?
It was good. It was good. I think it's definitely something that people should see. It's a good musical, but I think it's also an important story that people should see.
Well, I started to say, did you enjoy it? But that's not what I was trying to get across. I was just trying to see if it was good.
Yeah. I mean, it was enjoyable. It obviously deals with a very weighty subject, but it was enjoyable at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to move on to New York City, speaking of Broadway, but this is from the New York Toy Fair that was held at the Javits Center. Eagle Moss has announced a new round of figures and spaceships available for pre-order at their website. I just said it.
Sorry.
Ranging from the classic era of Star Trek films to their latest series, and they also announced things from the Wizarding World of Harry Potter and Battlestar Galactica. But I'm going to concentrate, obviously, on the Trek stuff, because in this show, the topic is Trek. There's my bell. Now, the first one is the one I really wanted to concentrate on, because I looked at this model and I said, I feel like I should know this, but I will read you the description. Yeah. In the Star Trek line, we have to remember back to the very first feature film, Star Trek the Motion Picture. The antagonist of the film was V'ger, the gigantic craft which aliens had built to house Voyager 6 and help it complete its mission to learn all that is learnable. This particular ship was so large that the audience never did get a clear view of the whole thing in a single shot. Here it is, and it has a certain resemblance to the alien craft from the Abyss. If you ask me, in a good way, V'ger will begin shipping in March. Now, one of the ways that the ship looked vaguely familiar is the director's cut of Star Trek the Motion Picture, where they added in a few extra shots when V'ger reaches Earth and the cloud has dissipated. In the director's cut, it's only a 2 AU cloud as opposed to an 82 AU cloud. You get to see those weapons that are being fired by V'ger to go and orbit around the Earth. You get to see them fly over parts of V'ger, and you can see some of this detail in those shots. So I said, oh, that's why it seems familiar. But other than that, I don't think you'd have a clue that this is what V'ger actually looked like.
It looks more like an adult plaything.
I was with you. I've got the director's edition, but it's been a long time since I've actually watched that particular one. So it didn't really clue with me at first. I was like, what is this? And now it makes sense. So the Enterprise would be tiny compared to this.
Oh yeah.
Right.
You can see the entrance on the front end, and you remember that was huge compared
actually,
to the Enterprise.
What would be cool is if they had like a tiny Enterprise.
It'd be the size, right in the middle. Like the head of a pin.
Here is a piece of rice, picture that.
Right. This Enterprise sucks.
Yeah. It's totally inaccurate. Jumping from 1979 forward, nearly 40 years in Star Trek at the other extreme of its timeline, although not so far apart in the series' internal timeline, we have a pair of ships from Star Trek Discovery. So the two additional ships that they introduced at the toy fair are the Enterprise, as seen in Star Trek Discovery, as well as the Klingon sarcophagus ship. And there's a lot of detail on both of these. I really want that Enterprise to go with my Enterprise collection.
I really like the look of this Enterprise.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's really good. This and the motion picture one is probably my favorite.
It doesn't say here. It said that the V'ger one was going to be available in March, I think I said. But I don't know if they give a timeline on these two here. But I'm sure if you go over to their site, they will have all the information about doing that. And how do you get to their website? Well, you go to the show notes for episode 39 over at The Topic is Trek. And you can find this article in the show notes and click through to their website. There's no other way you could possibly figure out how to get to their website. So don't even bother doing that. Do it the way I recommended.
You are all in error.
I do have a question, though.
Yes.
So if you look at the picture from the toy fair that they have the four ships there, there's the Enterprise and, of course, the Galactica. They got V'ger. What's that other one in the back? Is that the Enterprise? It's not the Enterprise E, is it?
Let's see. Do we? Because we move on from in the article, we move on from there to the Harry Potter stuff.
Isn't that Voyager? No, it's not Voyager.
No. And it.
No, it has the Enterprise E style nacelles, which I forget.
But
the
it's got more like a Voyager
Sovereign class. Is that Sovereign class? Was the Enterprise E Sovereign class? I think it was.
Don't know.
Well, I will try to investigate that when we move on to our last story from our files. But before I have Chuck do that one, and then we have one additional story, but it's not in our regular subspace chatter. I will remind you that not only can you find the links to all the articles that we talked about in our subspace chatter in the show notes for episode 39 over at thetopicistrek.com, but there are 21 additional stories we did not get a chance to get to, and those are also in the show notes. So you have like 2 weeks worth of stories to plow through. Yeah. While you're waiting for the next episode of our show. All right. That said, let's move on to our last story from Subspace Chatter.
You're not going to spotlight any of those, like Anson Mount joins Captain's Beaming to Star Trek Las Vegas 2019, or What I Learned from Saru. Sounds like a name of a children's book.
Why, Chuck, I think you just did.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm going to write a children's book called What I Learned from Saru. How to jury-rig a communications device and hail down a Starfleet ship. All right, from StarTrek.com. This is pretty impressive. They made it on StarTrek.com. From the moment we got off Star Trek The Cruise 2 last year, that would be 2018, we knew we wanted to get married on or during the next one. We had the absolute time of our lives during the cruise, making new friends, getting engaged, being steeped in fandom that we have cherished since we were kids, and we could think of... Could not think of any other way to celebrate the one of the most important days of our lives. They're, of course, referring to their wedding day. When we arrived at the hotel last year, we called Entertainment Cruise Productions to see if we could arrange to get married on the ship during Star Trek The Cruise 3. Unfortunately, due to the cruise being chartered and some logistical issues, both ECP and NCL were unable to accommodate the request. Not letting this deter us, we decided to get married in Jamaica while in port and then celebrate once we returned to the ship. We weighed our options and eventually found a resort in Jamaica called Mango-like candy, that provided wedding services geared specifically toward cruisers. This ended up being almost everything we could have wanted. And this couple got married. There's a wealth of signatures on one of the cruise posters that everybody got. It looks like they're probably mostly celebrity, but a bunch of friends are on there as well. And lots of beautiful pictures if you follow through the show notes. I do not recall seeing this couple, but I did hear about the couple that got engaged last year and married this year. Weren't they in 13 Forward or something when we were in there? This sounds very, very familiar.
I remember somebody saying they got married or something. Yeah.
I do recall that being mentioned. We did not get invited to the wedding. I think that.
Well, how rude! I mean, we're with our Star Trek podcast and everything.
I'm offended.
I'm never going to their wedding again.
I'm not sure if we should have even mentioned this article because they didn't really.
Yeah, let's just scratch it from the record.
I don't have the answer to your I don't think I have the answer to your question. It might be the Bonaventure that's in that.
Oh yeah, I went back and I actually went to Eagle Monster's website. I didn't even see it.
Yeah.
It's but time yeah, to play What's That Ship?
Exactly. While we play that fun game, we have one additional story because it's been a while. It's been a while since we've been back to sleepy little Vulcan, Alberta, Canada. So this is a follow-up story on something we covered on the show months ago.
The statue?
Town Council.
The swimming pool.
Exactly. Town Council selects company to design new pool.
Well, I thought it was already designed. They had the colors picked out and everything.
I'm not sure what's going on here because Vulcan Town Council has picked a company to design the new pool. Council agreed January 28th to enter into a contract with HDR Architecture Associates for design services for the swimming pool replacement project. The town will pay up to $358,000 for Canadian dollars for HDR services, with the funds to be drawn from the swimming pool capital reserve. Consultant Tango had recommended that Council choose HDR from the six companies that submitted proposals. The consultant's recommendation to select HDR was based on the company's, quote, quality of proposal, experience, and track record in the delivery of these types of facilities, reads an email from Tango director Gillian Carruthers. Yeah, I remember we actually looked at a video that showed...
But that was a little model.
It was a CGI presentation on it. I don't know whether that part of it is set, but they didn't have all the specifics, and so the architectural firm has to come up with the nitty gritty, you know, putting pencil to paper or stylus to screen, and doing all the legwork to say this is what you need to build that. So we're on top of this story. We will continue to cover the ins and outs of building a pool in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada. But with that, and the mystery of the Starfleet ship still a mystery, we are going to close up subspace chatter.
I'm going to figure it out.
All right. Well, Craig is on that case. We are now going to go out on our main mission. So roll that main mission theme we still don't have.
Do we? I was going to say, do we have one?
We don't.
Oh, I got it.
Oh, wait. Breaking news. Yes.
It's actually the Enterprise F.
Okay. How'd you find that out?
I'm looking at the picture of it.
He went in the future.
Ooh. Yeah.
Where have we seen the Enterprise F?
Was the Enterprise F and all
the
things?
Cue the crickets on that one.
I don't know. It looks kind of cool. It has a Voyager look, but it has the nacelles from like the Enterprise E. It's kind of sleek with no neck, but it has the saucer section kind of blends into the hull. It's nice.
Well, all I know is that the first thing that comes up is Memory Beta, because it's the non-canon Star Trek wiki version of Memory Alpha. So it's there. We've got one in the, no, that's not.
I mean, it says Star Trek, the official Starships collection, but.
Enterprise F made its first appearance in the mission Boldly They Rode.
What I did was I found another article that about the Eagle Moss Toy Fair, and it had lots of pictures. So I'll put them in the show notes right now. How about that?
Okay.
Yeah, please do. So we can all learn. We can all learn something this evening—a valuable life lesson about Enterprise F, which
and how to Google.
Exactly.
Now can we play it?
Now you can play our theme.
Unable to comply. Internal scanner relays have been damaged.
Darn it! We'll just go with this then.
Yeah, that's good enough. We're now in an airlock or something. We're gonna proceed with our main mission. We're going to be talking about the two most recent episodes of Star Trek Discovery. So needless to say, if we didn't spoil Star Trek the Motion Picture for you with the recap of
Brace Yourself. Voyage,
yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Exactly. We're going to be talking about the episodes Saints of Imperfection, and The Sound of Thunder. I'm going to read you the recaps, the brief plot synopsis of each of these. In Saints of Imperfection, Burnham and the crew navigate a dangerous alien landscape in a race against time to save Tilly's life. But Stamets is not at all prepared for what they find in the process. Section 31 is assigned to help track down Spock, much to Pike's dismay. And the plot synopsis for The Sound of Thunder. When a new signal appears over Saru's home planet, Burnham, Saru, and the crew embark on a perilous mission that puts Saru in danger and raises questions about the Red Angel's intentions. Hugh struggles to come to terms with his new reality. All right, I'm going to throw things open and ask, first of all, any initial thoughts about the two episodes?
Initial thoughts on Saints of Imperfection was that this definitely felt like a two-parter to the previous episode because of the Tilly thread. But we were commenting on the last show that there were a lot of things going on.
Absolutely. A lot of wheels in motion.
Yes. A lot of plot threads that they needed to tie up. This tied up some of them, but there's still a lot of things happening and some new ones introduced. So we now have Dr. Culber back. What
or
becomes of
is
him?
The
relationship there definitely feels like it's changed between Culber and Stamets.
Agreed.
Is it salvageable? Is it where is that going to lead? The whole thing with if where am I going with this? May, the alien known as May.
Yes.
They only had two of these pods, and I thought it was a very bold assumption that they had two and only two, because if you had found a transporter pad and said, oh, well, this must lead to the place where we can, you could have beamed anywhere with a transporter pad. Well, how do they know that there weren't like thousands of these things scattered throughout the mycelial network? And she was going to end up on, you know, some strange planet halfway across the universe. I thought,
I get the impression, I mean, because May was the one who said it, that if they use that one, then the connection is lost.
She said it at the end after we found out there were only two, but we only knew about the one that was in engineering. And they said, oh, this must work like a transporter. And I'm thinking there's a lot of transporters in the universe. How do you know there aren't, you know, lots of these, you know,
I see.
Biopods all talking. Over the place.
Okay. All right.
Well, I came away from that episode enjoying it. I felt like it was a big stretch to actually go get Culber and bring him back. But
they weren't going there to get Culber. They were going there to get Tilly. Found Culber.
No, I'm talking about the overall arch of the story.
Right.
I know that I felt like I know they weren't going in there to get him. I'm just saying to get him back, it just seemed like a big stretch. But I think it kind of worked in a way. It was just kind of weird. Now, I tell you what I took away from this whole episode. I don't really care for Section 31 as much anymore. they're not as clandestine and secretive of a organization because everybody seems to know about them.
Oh, hell, well, beam me aboard. I'm your consultant from Section 31.
Yeah.
Well, they are and they aren't, because we had a couple of things that happened. First of all, we have Tyler on the bridge and he contacts Leland by tapping the badge on his chest.
Yes.
To which Pike says, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And then we have,
hey, Pike was saying it. We were all thinking it.
Yeah. And then we have Section 31. They called it camouflaging. I think both he and, Cornwell referred to as camouflage, not cloaking.
Because they were camouflaged as an asteroid drifting by.
Yeah. So we have stuff that they're doing that no one else in Starfleet seems to know about. We also have the thing that when Leland Shipp put a tractor beam on Discovery, they didn't just shoot a tractor beam. They shot out those devices that latched on to Discovery.
Yeah, that's true. That was
and
different.
Those were the things that they used the tractor beam against.
Maybe they were some kind of tractor beam amplifiers.
Maybe they didn't want to be. They didn't want to be attached to the ship if it got it pulls them in.
I didn't. You know, I didn't even recognize Hugh when they first spotted him in the network. You know, in the alternate. Yeah. As soon as they showed this scruffy dude, I'm like, it looked like Prince.
Prince. Yeah.
A lot harder to bring back.
Prince is back. Yay.
Must be that dream that that Jet Reno had meant something when she dreamed of Prince. Yeah, I found it. I mentioned in the article that I was writing, I felt it really odd, though, that Reno was in the entire episode in the bay there doing all this stuff with Stamets.
And suddenly we go to the next nothing. Episode.
She's not there at all. No mention of her. You know, I'm thinking it's kind of like, okay, that's a big mess. What a problem. What a shame. I'm out.
At lunch break.
Yeah, I was going to say she's in the mess hall.
Maybe she's an imaginary friend of somebody's.
Maybe so.
Hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I did have that thought way back when, and I think that that's not going to pan out as anything. But one of my initial thoughts when Reno first showed up was kind of that vibe I had when Pike shows up on Talos and you have those people that survived all that time on the planet surface, but they weren't really there.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of had that same vibe going to it, but you know, she's showing up again, although she suddenly just seems like comes out of nowhere, shows up and then leaves again, very much like May was doing. But I don't know if I think that so much anymore. Maybe I should go back to thinking that because she wasn't here this time around. I don't know.
Yeah.
And can we trust Giorgio?
Of course not.
Yeah. I think she really likes to play it both sides against the middle. And it's hard to figure out her true intention. Clearly, she has affection for Burnham.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she sees, you know, her Burnham, just like Burnham sees her Giorgio.
Yeah, there's a connection there.
Which is why she was trying to help get the Discovery out of, you know, to help it hold in place by doing some things on the Section 31 ship.
I love how she blackmailed her way for 3 more minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can only play that card once. Hope it was worth it. I also was noting that after a couple of episodes where Dr. Pollard was just giving a one-liner about, difficult patient, and walking out the door like, okay, is that all we're going to see of Dr. Pollard? These past couple of episodes, she's had a role. She's had lines. Yep. She's had scenes. I wonder what's going to happen if Culber gets back up to speed and he's now back in sick bay. Are we going to have two doctors in there? And that would be
maybe kind he wants of a, to be a writer now.
Ah, I see. He really wants to direct, really, is what's going on.
He's angling.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking, I don't think we haven't had a show before where you've had two doctors in sick bay. In Next Generation, eventually, I think some people moved up, but you really had one lead,
right?
Doctor.
Well, wait a minute. So I remember them saying on Discovery that even though we saw Culber and everything, we never did see the chief medical officer.
Right. Yeah. There's always been the chief medical officer, and that one seems to take the role of doctor on the ship. There's got to be other doctors.
He's in his quarters drunk.
Right. Because it wasn't Culber.
No.
No one seems to be referring to now. No one's referring to Pollard as chief medical officer. I don't know whether she is or not, but I have not heard anyone refer to her that way. So yeah, where is the chief medical officer if it's neither of them?
So I'm going to shift gears a little bit to the next episode with Saru and Kaminar and the Ba'ul. Give me some thoughts on that one.
I thought this was a much better glimpse into Kaminar and how this whole thing works than The Brightest Star was. I felt like The Brightest Star really glossed over a lot of this stuff.
It did, and we had talked about that, that was one of those that could have been a much longer show. But I liked it as a setup. It was a good prequel to the show, and that's kind of what we suspected when we were talking about the short treks, is where are they going to manifest this information they're passing to us? Is it purely for focused entertainment value on that thing alone, or will they weave it into the storyline? And we're starting to get our answer on that one, and hopefully we'll see others do the same. So I do like it from that standpoint, that we felt like Saru didn't have to do as much explanation about how he got there and why. He did touch on it lightly, saying it was 20 or 28 years or whatever it was.
18.
It was 18. You're right. And we were still trying to do the math, but we're not going to go there right now. The bowl reminded me of the slime monster that took Tasha Yar.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I was having a discussion with Bonnie about that. There's two things about that. First of all, they were very skinny. And I noted, I think someone else noted this on a thread I was reading, but I couldn't find that note again, so I went back and looked. When they're showing the screen that shows the shifting populations as, the Kelpians almost wipe out the Ba'ul. The Ba'ul got down to a population of 254. Now,
you could wipe out that genetic pool with a good sneeze.
Right. So the fact that they are very frail looking could be a side effect of the fact that their gene pool was based on 254 samples.
Right.
And then the other thing is that they appear, because their ship was underground, they were in this liquid, that it's possible that they were the sea creature and that the Kelpians were the land creature, which would be a good way for two sentient
rival species
to arise at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if
the Kelpians were fishing for the Ba'ul.
Well, they were searching for kelp, and that's
well, they
bizarre.
Were spearfishing with the things that come off their head.
They were. But I was wondering if they are indeed water-based, when the Ba'ul showed up in the room with Saru and Sarana, was the liquid just a coating over it so it could be in an oxygen environment that was not liquid? So rather than putting on a spacesuit, maybe the entire rest of the ship is liquid, and it had to have some sort of protective coating to be out of that environment.
Like the reverse of scuba for us to survive underwater. You're taking some of its environment with it. That interesting. The big question mark in my mind from that episode was, why the 60-second timer on the transporter?
Well, I have a theory about that. That's just to help explain it. But it's all right, here's what we're going to say. We're going to say that you can only set the self timer on the transporter for 60 seconds
or more.
Right. Yeah. So that, you've got to make sure everybody's on the pads, I've got to also do this other thing, or I've got to get this other, so a minimum of, because you don't want half a person disappearing off of the transporter.
Especially if you've got no transporter engineer standing there because, the ensign or lieutenant or whatever was out to lunch that day and you got to beam yourself. I tell you, budget cuts, and you got to beam yourself everywhere these days. Yeah. I can understand 10, 15, 20. It's only a few feet away.
I know.
It was a plot device.
It absolutely was, so they could have that conversation. Saru, don't do this. I'm like, here we go.
Stupid 1 minute rule.
Saru starts looking at his wrist. Like,
you're not wearing a watch. I wish I was right now.
Yeah, I really enjoy this episode. I like the how they kind of explained everything and then kind of flipped the script a little bit by saying, "Oh, the Ba'ul was the prey species actually originally," and But one thing that really I enjoyed seeing Serana. I thought she did Hannah Spear did a great job as Saru's sister. Oh my God, I'm losing words there. So I thought she was great, and of course, seeing the other Kelpians walking around and stuff, it was really, I think they did a good job showing, you know, a little bit of a population walking around. After
how do they not fall over in those shoes? I can understand Doug Jones has a lot of practice with those, but man, those things look like the most dangerous thing on the show.
Yeah, he said, I watched the interview with him after the show, and he said that he was actually asked if he wanted to play the Ba'ul, you know, in the Tarpon. But he said
he couldn't play a water creature. I can't imagine that at all.
Yeah, that's a stretch. What his past would indicate that he could do a role like that?
Yeah, nothing. Anyway, so he said he was asked, but then he thought he wanted to. He thought it'd be great to play against himself, but then he went, he had too much going on. Not only did he have to play himself and then worry, you know, spend the time to get into that makeup, but he would have to spend the time in the other makeup get into that.
That would thing. Be the killer.
And since he's the only Kelpian we've ever seen really in a large population, like, you know, really on the series, that he had to play, he had to really
coach,
coach everybody. Yeah, that's the word. Kind of coach everybody on how to be it. So he had too much to do to actually play the Ba'ul.
Right. That would have been cool, though. That would have been pretty.
He could have just stood there in a bodysuit with dots on it.
I am the enemy. I am the other.
But he did. He did call out Javier, and I can't say his last name. It's actually a friend of his that does these kind of creatures that he does. You know, like he does the full immersion makeup.
Mm-hmm.
This guy does the same kind of thing, but he's a Spanish guy. So
I. When I look at Doug Jones doing his doing Saru, I think of the conversation that Rene Auberjonois had on the Star Trek cruise when he was talking about the early days of DS9 when they were coming up with Odo's character, and they said they did not want to put a mask on him, and Rene actually took mask acting classes.
You're given a mask and you have the emotion based on the mask.
Right. And and they thought that you know, the objection, I forgot who it was, if it was Michael Piller or one of the writers said, no, I don't think that's going to work. I don't think it was, it was Gene. It might have been Berman. But they said, you know, it hides too much. You want people to express the emotion. And he really brought that out. So when I have to wonder if Doug Jones had similar training or worked with a mentor like Rene or how he, because he is so good at that. He really, he exudes emotion with his eyes at times.
I mean, it's kind of his career. I mean, he's had lots of practice doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how do you get there? that's what I'm wondering. I'd love to talk to the man and ask about his story.
And one of my lingering question about this episode, and I wrote about it in the review that I did, which you can find over at thetopicistrek.com, is the leap that we're taking that the Kelpians and the Ba'ul are going to be able to work all this out now.
No. I don't think so.
And I thought it was interesting that, okay, so this all happens. Discovery comes in, dances around to get around the Prime Directive, which again, I also talk about it in great extent in the article that I wrote, the review that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of it, they leave. Saru, who started this kind of this thing, he leaves. And he even asks his sister to go with him for a while.
Right.
Okay. So all the people that said, oh, well, we can figure out how to work this out, they were all going to leave.
Right.
The dynamic certainly has changed. I think there's 2,000 years of of culture and history and belief on, obviously, on the Kelpian side. And there's this bias and hatred from the Ba'ul. You don't just sit down at the table and go, oh, well, let's work this out.
Well, let's face it, it's going to be bias and hatred on the part of the Kelpians, because all those people, all those Kelpians just are presumably deceased. We never really know what happened to them. And they've been told a lie for generations.
Right.
So I don't think they're really in the best of moods either.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty, I don't want to say naive, but how does Saru come to the conclusion, like, well, we'll just get past all that? You know, we won't do what our instincts tell us to do.
He believes in the greater good.
And do we have any additional thoughts about the Red Angel based on this episode?
Yes, I do like the fact that they took advantage of Saru's improved eyesight to get a better glance at this creature. And like, oh, it's a spacesuit of some type. How he zips around through the universe so fast, like the Flash, I don't know, but we'll try to figure that out. And the tachyon particles was an interesting twist at the end too. So that probably has a good way to, it came in at the end and blew out the Ba'ul's cell phone network, basically.
Right, with an a massive spike of electromagnetic radiation.
Gave a big EMP and blew out all the towers. Was that to protect something? Was it to prevent something? What was the purpose behind that?
Here, let me help you finish this out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we're left with a few more facts and a whole bunch more questions.
Oh, I've got it. I think I figured it out finally.
Oh?
Yeah. So it's a humanoid wearing the mechanized suit, right? Inside that suit, Scott Bakula.
Actually, I was going to say it was a time traveler from Enterprise.
I was going with Wesley myself, but we'll see.
The traveler. What was that guy's name? On Star Trek Enterprise, he was.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The one that kept. You know, oh, Archer's going, oh, great, you're back again. That guy, right?
Yeah. And because of him, we got a glimpse of the Enterprise J.
Huge, thin Enterprise. It's like a wafer going through space.
Who would make a ship like that? It looks like it's stretched out silly putty.
Somebody sat on your plans. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just when Ego Moss makes that one, they just give us a piece of paper with a printout of the ship on it.
Starfleet went two-dimensional.
$45, please.
Yeah, right.
Well, three colors. I mean, gee, what do you want? All right, that pretty much wraps it up for our review of these two episodes. There are lots of other things we could have talked about.
There it goes. But,
oh, my goodness. But we are going to move on to our Warp Speed Roundtable.
There you go.
I guess it's a warp speed exam table at this point. I don't know.
More like a lazy Susan.
More like this.
There you go.
Wait. There. Now at least I'm not dead.
Yeah.
Wheel up that laptop.
It's like Barney from the Simpsons. He's drinking under the beer fountain. Oh no, my heart stopped. Oh, there it goes.
What's on the Warp Speed Roundtable?
Well, we're going to talk quickly about the last time around. We asked ourselves the question about who is our least favorite character in all of Star Trek. And we put that out to the listeners as well.
Yes.
And we get a few responses to that.
Yes.
Listener Diane said that she hates Alexander and Janet Lester.
Alexander, he does all the music.
No, not Alexander Courage.
Oh.
Alexander Roshenko. Yeah.
You had a Craig episode.
Oh, my goodness. Tongue not work so well this time of episode.
I didn't hate Alexander. He did get annoying here and there.
Well, that's...
When he was a kid. Yeah.
When he was a kid, but I kind of blamed it on the actor. As he got older, there were some, he wasn't quite as...
Actually, it was two different actors.
Well, it was several. Yeah. But as the character got older, they got different actors, and I thought it was played a little bit better.
All right. And then we heard from Chris, and Chris said, back in the day, it was Wesley Crusher. But I came to appreciate Will Wheaton, and so now I see Wesley differently. So
you know what? So does Will.
Indeed.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I never really had a problem with Wesley Crusher. I just kind of, I remember thinking, that'd be cool to be on a starship and be that age, when I was watching the show. So I never really had a problem with him. He was young. He was, whatever.
Yeah. Well, he was supposed to be a prodigy. So, Ken said Pulaski. which is one of my answers as well. And then Crazy Joe wrote a novel.
Oh, crap. Here we go.
Read on.
Okay. Because we were mentioning several people. He has a list as well. He says, here's my three with an honorable mention. My three least favorite Star Trek characters. One, Shinzon, for all the reasons Craig already mentioned. Mm-hmm. Seska. Never could stand her. And she was the one that was supposed to be a Bajoran Maquis, but turned out she was a Cardassian undercover agent. And then his number three is Tuvok. Vulcans can suppress emotion. Actor Tim Russ interpreted that to mean act like a cranky blank blank.
A-hole.
Yes. Nimoy Spock, Kinto Spock, and Jolene Blaylock as T'Pol all managed to act unemotional but still be likable.
I don't know. I really didn't care. Maybe it was the way Jolene played the character. I didn't really care for T'Pol. And maybe that was the point, was we're not supposed to like her because, at that point.
Yeah, I liked her later on.
Arrogance maybe I'm thinking about the earlier episodes where the Vulcans are arrogant and think we're children and don't deserve, they're withholding technology.
And that's exactly where position they were in, because we were just starting to stretch our legs.
That's right. And then she got schooled in time travel. So take that, Vulcan Science Academy.
Yeah.
And Tuvok always just felt like a jerk. His honorable mention, I have problems with his honorable mention, but it's his honorable mention, so I'm giving it to him. Diane Warren. Okay, she's not a character, but she wrote Faith of the Heart, and that alone earns her a place on my list. Now, keep in mind that the song existed before Enterprise. She didn't.
John Bon Jovi sang it great, though.
Didn't. No. No. And it's not totally Clips of the Heart either. None of those things.
How's Bonnie Tyler?
I did like T'Pol. You're right, though. She acted very arrogant at first because standoffish. She wasn't really incorporating herself with them, and she acted like she was above them.
She kind of became, as the series went along, her attitude became more
relaxed.
Constant bewilderment about what was going on. It's like,
why am I here?
I've lost track of the plot here. What's happening?
Yeah.
This time around, we're going to play another episode of Shuttle Pod or Airlock. And I think the name explains it all.
The title of the show?
Yes. I'm going to mention a character, and the three of us are going to say whether or not that character deserves a shuttle pod to go off and explore the vast, vast galaxy, or be shoved out an airlock. And the character up for discussion this time, and also the title character of this episode, as we pointed out, is Nero
airlock.
From Star Trek 2009.
Airlock.
So I think I will obviously go first to Chuck.
Airlock.
And why do you say airlock?
Because anybody who carries a grudge for that long should go out the airlock.
Like 25 years.
I mean, I like the character. I like the actor who played the character. I think he did a great job. But it just, sitting around waiting 25 years for Spock to come through the wormhole. Just, you got anything better to do except sharpen the points on your starship?
All right. So that's pretty definitive. What about you, Craig?
I'm going to say I'm a little in between, but I will give him the shuttle pod only what? because he is more motivated than Shinzon was.
Well, just, the bar is kind of low there. I'm not sure if you've got
motivation is not
he was more motivated than a tribble.
I think getting out of bed,
he's Nero more motivated, has more motivation than I am most mornings, and I get up at 4:30 a.m.
Yeah, no, I thought he would. I liked him. I liked his character to the point. I think he was too hell bent on not listening to any reason. You know, he was obviously messed up. I don't know. I thought he was fine as a, but it, what not nearly the best villain, of course. But
right,
you know.
And I'm going to say Airlock. And the reason I'm saying Airlock is because I didn't feel. Now, this is, again, it's kind of tough because I'm separating things out here. But he was an inappropriate villain for a story because he is highly motivated and has somewhat of a reason for what he does that it's a bit hard to completely argue against because his entire world was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And now we don't see it in the movie. It's a cut scene. I will grant that. But then he arrives now back in time and he's taken away to a prison camp by the Klingons for what is like 10 years or something like that. So, I mean, the guy is got a lot of reasons to not be, hey, Spock, good to see ya.
What's up?
You know, and it's also, it was a bizarre character that, you know, he first shows up on the screen. He's like saying hi to people that, you know, that are on the Enterprise. Hey, how you doing? Glad to meet you.
Oh yeah. That was,
hey, Chris,
weird.
What's up? Yeah. You know? Sure. So I think for those reasons that I just felt he wasn't a good enough villain. His story had almost too much of a motivation for you to not be a little bit on his side. And so you need a villain who's villainous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's doing villainous things. Yes, but there's other things going on there.
Is that a common theme that we're just not getting good Star Trek villains? I mean, Lorca was a good one because he was subversive in that way. I did right. like that theme. Aside from that, when's the last time we had a really good villain?
Well, I would say that in Into Darkness, John Harrison was fine until he called himself Khan.
Exactly.
I thought he was fine. I thought he was perfect. I thought I even liked the motivation. He was trying to save his people that were in those photon tubes.
But is he really the villain in that story, or is the villain?
Well, hey, look at Marvel. Look at Thanos. He thinks he's doing the right thing, not necessarily he's just being evil. You know, he's right. wiping out half of the population for a reason, and he thinks he's right. So, you know, I don't think you have to be necessarily evil. But you need to have motivations that are juxtaposed against the, you know, the protagonist.
Yeah, and some of those you can, like Clinton said, you can kind of empathize with them and go, okay, I can kind of see, you know, I could. Mm-hmm. You know, there's rationale here that has half a reason in the, in, you know, when you take a step back, it's like you're freaking crazy and shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, I mean, look at Nero. What was he hoping to gain other than just some revenge?
Exactly. He was hoping to gain revenge.
You're not bringing Romulus back.
Except in that case, you know, his logic could be, if I wipe out everything else, then I will then go and save Romulus myself because it still exists.
Well, wow, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
But no, I was the reason I was saying that is Khan the villain. To me, the villain of Star Trek Into Darkness is Marcus, is Peter Weller's character.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And he is a villain, right? His motivation is just, well, I'm going to start war so that we beat everybody else to the punch. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. War's coming anyway, so why not? It's good for the economy.
Just turn the key. Yeah. It's just turn the key.
Yeah. So I think he really is, Khan is like, collateral damage to Marcus. I'm going to use him and ends to my mean, the means to my ends on this to start a war.
Hey, well, let me ask you a little larger question. Do we ever have to have a villain?
No, you don't always have to have a villain.
I mean, I don't know if 100%. Well, the Voyage Home didn't really have a villain.
You have to have conflict. Well, I don't know. It depends on the probe. I mean, the probe, we don't know what the probe's motivations were other than contacting the whales.
It was driven by a Red Angel.
Ah. The Red Angels were driving that big, huge core sample.
It looked like an oil drum, actually.
No, it was clearly a core sample taken from rock.
Or from FIFA, because it was a soccer ball at the bottom of it. But anyway, all right. So we're going to put the question out to you as well, our listeners. What do you think? Does Nero deserve the shuttle pod or the airlock? You can tweet your answer to The Topic is Trek over on Twitter, or you can leave a note over on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thetopicistrek. And we will give the results of any new votes in on this. But right now, as it stands, Nero is going out the airlock. So
can
you save him, listeners? Think about it. But with that, I think it's about time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here. You can find me, Clinton, over at comedyforecast.com. That's all one word with the number 4. And April is fast approaching, so be sure to subscribe now because you'll be getting a show every single day in the month of April. Excitement will be
getting all caught up on all my other podcasts just so I have room for that.
Clear the decks.
That's right. Yeah, that's actually good.
What are you two up to these days?
We're still doing
podcasts here and there.
Yeah, still doing Technorama. I think we're coming up on 558 shows this weekend. Still trudging along, enjoying the ride over at chuckchat.com/technorama. You can find us there if you want just a good laugh, geek out with us, have fun, hang out, join in the discussion.
All righty. Well, with that said, and we did say that, it's time to hit the theme, boys.
Warning, warp core breach a lot sooner than you think.
Run,
We better get out of here fast.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on the red shirt.
Or Worf's shirt.
It's yellow.